The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Welcome to Tuesday, July 21st in the year of the plague, 2020. I'm still not there. I'm on vacation. But, of course, Colonel Kurt Schlichter is filling in all week getting his radio rep. It's like basic training for radio. He's in boot camp right now, except he's been in boot camp for 5 or 6 years. Take it away, Colonel.
Thank you, Hugh Hewitt. I think of it more as officer candidate school, where I want to assume command here at the Relief Factor Studio in beautiful Southern California. I am a retired United States Army colonel. I'm the senior columnist at townhall.com. I am the author of this book, The 21 Biggest Lies About Donald Trump and You. It's been out for about 2 weeks. You need to buy it if you haven't. But you know what else I am, folks? I am a noted Los Angeles trial lawyer, and those skills will come in handy today because I'm going to get to the rundown, and it's all law-related in some way or form. And we've got great guests to talk about it. We got Andy McCarthy coming in. David Drucker's going to be here. Byron York. Annie No. You've got to hear Annie No. That's the next hour. Florida Senator Rick Scott and acting DHS Secretary Chad Wolf will be joining us in the third hour. So you basically need to just turn on your radio and leave it, because if you don't, you are not going to be informed about what is going on. But let me tell you what's going on. It is all law all the time right now here on the Hugh radio program, because that's what's happening in the news. And in the next segment, I'm going to talk a little about the civil law and the Fox lawsuit, the Ed Henry and Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity thing. I'll talk about that next segment a little bit from the perspective of what I do, which is a civil litigator. What would I do if I got that complaint on my desk and how I would look at it? So you guys want to stick around for that. But let's talk about what else is going on in the world of criminal law. The first thing is a tragedy, a terrible murder of Judge Salas's son and the critical wounding of her husband. She's a federal district court judge in New Jersey. Shot by a guy dressed as a FedEx delivery man a couple days ago. And yesterday, the police found who they believe is the killer. Turns out to be a lawyer who appeared in front of her, appeared a little bit obsessed with her. Now, you may think, what the heck is a lawyer? This is crazy talk. And yeah, a little bit. Now, it's a hugely serious thing when somebody attacks a federal judge or family. It is, you know, it is red alert, all hands on deck, general quarters, battle stations for the federal government, because that is an attack, potentially that is attack on our justice system. This seems to be a nut. And you're thinking, a nut? A lawyer who's a nut? Look, I hang around in courthouses. Okay, there are lawyers who are nuts. I mean, just bonkers, just weirdos, just like everybody else. You know, passing the bar exam is not the same thing as passing a sanity check. Okay, this is rare. It's rare it gets that bad, but you know, I remember my mom's law office, and she had a law partner who was a Green Beret, and when I was in college, he said, hey, I got to move my office from here to there. I'll throw you guys a few bucks and a case of beer if you move the stuff for me. Oh, boy, that's great. And I'm moving his desk. I open it up, and there's a there's an automatic pistol in there. And I'm thinking, and I was like, Doug, why, what's with the gat in your desk? He's like, this is a crazy business, Kurt. You got to take care of yourself. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers need to be with the judge and her family in this terrible, terrible time. Like I said, it looks like it was a lone nut instead of a calculated attack on our judicial system. But, you know, who knows? Who knows in this terrible time? Because there seem to be calculated attacks on our judicial system and some by participants in our judicial system. You remember the McCluskeys, that's that family that was attacked in their home in Missouri by a bunch of rioters who decided to break down a wall, a fence, trespass. And he comes out and he's got an M16. She had, I looked like a Walther PPK. Now, let's put aside my serious questions about their trigger discipline. Okay, she's got her finger on the trigger. She's flagging people with a weapon. He's brandishing in ways that I'm not particularly happy with. I am a firm believer in the Second Amendment. I believe every American citizen who is healthy and adult and law-abiding should have a real assault rifle. I don't mean an AR-15. I mean an M4 or M16 that fires automatic, because I believe that, like paying taxes and doing jury duty, defending your country, your community, your family is every American's duty. I like the Swiss model. You know, you have the rifle in the house just in case things go to hell. Kurt, things are never going to go to hell. That's what I thought before I got called out for 3 weeks of duty during the Los Angeles riot with the 3rd Battalion, 160th Infantry. But it is incumbent on us to do that in a way that is safe. I do not believe it was illegal. There is a very clear Castle Doctrine law, some call them stand there, your ground law in Missouri, that you are allowed to defend your property when you're threatened. These rioters came in, and according to the McCluskeys, threatened them with death, threatened their dog. Man, you put the dog on the table, all right? You've gone to another level, okay? You want to threaten me, that's a bad move. You want to threaten my family, that's a very bad move. You threaten a dog, that is likewise a bad move. We are Americans. You don't threaten families, you don't threaten dogs. And these people were scared. And, of course, Kim Gardner, who is the Soros-purchased district attorney, and they don't call it district, I think it's like circuit prosecutor or something, for St. Louis, who has dropped charges against actual rioters, decides to charge these people with a felony. And now she says, very nice, well, I will allow a diversion program. And that's where you basically behave for a while and they dismiss the charges. That is baloney. And thankfully, the Republican administration in Missouri is not taking it. The governor says, look, they're never going to jail. I'm going to pardon them. The Attorney General has made a motion already. He's already filed a motion to dismiss this case. Now, I'm not sure how Missouri law works, if he has standing to do so. But hey, that's great news, because here's what they're trying to do. By controlling prosecutors, they provide top cover for these rioters. But they also send a message, don't you dare defend yourself. Well, defending yourself is a natural right of every human being. And it is a right enshrined in our Constitution, the Second Amendment. And they want to tell you, you can't do it. You can't. Now, keep in mind, the McCluskeys called the cops, and the cops were like, well, we're not coming. So there's kind of a social contract here. We give up a few of our, normally it would be our prerogative to enforce justice on our own. But we're going to give that up and allow the state to do it through its procedures. But we expect the state to do it. If the state says, well, I'm not going to do it, and also you're not going to do it, that just doesn't work. There's a lot of chaos. And we're seeing it in Portland, of course. Now, we have this whole thing about unidentified federal officers or unidentified thugs hassling innocent protesters. We're going to talk a lot more about that with Andy McCarthy a little later this hour. Andy, no, next hour. But that's just baloney. First of all, you see these senators like Kamala Harris, and they are sending out their little tweets in solidarity with the anarchist communist thugs. Unidentified people, you know, kidnapping people off the street. Okay, they've got patches that identify their agency, okay? Border Patrol, Customs, DEA, Department of Homeland Security. We will be talking with the acting Secretary of Homeland Security in the third hour, Chad Wolf. But, you know, so that's a lie that they're unidentified. You know, kidnapping people. Okay, when you arrest someone for committing a federal crime, like attacking a federal officer or a federal building, that's not kidnapping. It's called an arrest. They hate, right? They hate that the feds are fighting back. Because like in Missouri, like in St. Louis, in Portland, you have a DA. Well, you have a mayor who refuses to use the cops to protect citizens, and you have a DA who refuses to charge criminals. Feds don't play that game. Feds do not play that game. If you commit a federal crime, which includes crossing a state line to riot or using wires that cross state line, basically a cell phone, you've committed a federal crime. That's 5 years in the pen. That's a real charge. They don't like that. So we need to do a lot more of it. We're all about law and order here on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter. Stick around. We got a lot more to come.
President Trump has a huge announcement for his top supporters. We will be celebrating the 2020 Republican National Convention this summer. He wants you to enter for your chance to join him at the convention. If you win, the team will cover the flight, hotel, and give you VIP passes for yourself and a guest. All you have to do is text Hewitt to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump at the convention. Again, that's H-E-W-I-T-T 2, 88022, 88022. To enter to win this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be his special guest. Paid for by the Donald J. Trump for President, Inc.
We are back on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I am guest host Kurt Schlichter, retired Army colonel, senior columnist, town hall, author of the book, 21 Biggest Lies About Donald Trump and You, which you should get. I'm also a Los Angeles trial lawyer, and I want to share some of that experience with you. Yesterday, two ladies who used to be associated with Fox sued Fox, and they also sued several other people at Fox, Ed Henry, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, some other people, over alleged sexual misconduct. Now, I defend lawsuits. I bring lawsuits for clients occasionally. What would I do if I was handed this lawsuit? Because I've gone and read the lawsuit. And, first of all, they bring these lawsuits together, and they're not exactly related. Okay? They're in the same lawsuit. The Eckert and Aru lawsuits really could have been two different lawsuits because they're kind of talking about two different things. Jennifer Eckert says that she was somehow involved with Ed Henry. Now, I think it's interesting when I'm looking at this thing, and she has a number of texts from Ed Henry. She was kind of associated with, she was a production assistant and, you know, worked on various shows, wanted to become, signed on air talent. And her allegation is that Ed Henry basically enticed her into a relationship and she was afraid not to comply because he would hurt her career if she didn't. And there are several incidents at hotels, and I'm not going to go into it, but it's kind of, it's a little sordid. And I'm reading this thing, and she's got texts between them. They were texting each other. And his texts are pretty, they kind of make your skin crawl. They really do. She doesn't include her own texts to him. We don't see what she's saying to him. The other thing is, one of the texts says, "The heck with your safe word. I'm ignoring your safe word." It's probably the first time the word safe word has been used on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. And I would seriously suggest you probably, if you don't know what that means, you probably shouldn't Google it. That's going to ruin your morning. The bottom line is, I'm thinking, if this is a non-consensual relationship, if this isn't kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, an affair, because apparently Ed Henry was married, why do you have a safe word? Just throwing that out there. I'm not sure as a lawyer I would have thrown that particular bit of information into my complaint. as a defense attorney, I'm thinking the problem is, first of all, Ed Henry's got a record of doing stuff like this. And he was fired immediately. And Fox is saying, hey, we found out about it, we fired him. Her allegation is, no, you knew this guy was dirty for a while. I think the attack by the defense attorney is going to be that this was a consensual relationship. She agreed to it, and that she continued it. That's going to be the attack. Now, I don't know what the actual facts are. And I'm not talking about the actual facts because, again, I don't have any testimony. I don't have any evidence. That'll come out in discovery. And discovery is going to be very interesting. Her deposition is going to be long and thorough and probably pretty painful because there are a lot of questions. And the defense attorneys are going to seek to establish. And Ed Henry's already said, his lawyer's already put out a statement saying this is a consensual relationship. Just psst. As for the other ones, the issues against Hannity and Tucker Carlson and some other folks by Aru, I think that's how you pronounce it, Kathy Aru, who was a guest and wanted to be a contributor and wasn't. A lot of it seems to be a lot of, hey, come up to my hotel room, which she did not do. And there doesn't seem to be as much evidence. There's no texts there. Fox says it hired outside counsel to do an investigation and says it's absolute baloney. That one, I think that is considerably weaker. So my assessment, Ed Henry, probably in trouble. Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, I'd put my money on them in a court of law. This is Kurt Schlichter. I'm guest hosting for the great Hugh Hewitt. We're going to be back with Andy McCarthy right after this.
Guns and money.
Lawyers, guns, and money. That's pretty. That is actually the tramp stamp that I have tattooed onto my body. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program, providing you with too much information. This is why I do these shows, because I get to talk to people who I admire, who I read. I don't always agree with them in this particular case, but I always read him. It's Andrew C. McCarthy. He's a senior writer. Contributing editor at National Review. You need to follow him at Andrew C. McCarthy on Twitter. Andrew, thanks for coming.
Kurt, my man, it's great to be with you, and the feeling is mutual.
You might not believe it, but as a Los Angeles trial lawyer, I have quite an ego. So
tell me that's not true.
I know, right? Who would have thought? Well, thank you for that powerful and completely justified testimonial. Andy, we've got a lot to talk about today, so I want to jump right into it. You're a former United States federal prosecutor. Working for the Department of Justice. You've been outside for a while, but I think you're the foremost and you're the essential analyst for what's been going on, and a lot of stuff's going on. Can you explain to us a little about what's currently happening in the General Mike Flynn case? There was a development yesterday, a filing by the Department of Justice opposing en banc review.
Well, here's what's happening. The panel decided 2-1. It's a 3-judge panel, decided 2-1, granting the mandamus petition, which means effectively ordering Judge Sullivan to dismiss the case, which is basically how it should come out. And I was kind of surprised that they did the right thing, mainly because I listened to the oral argument, which is, 2 hours of my life I could never get back.
you and me both, brother.
But they seemed in the oral argument to be leaning in the direction of kind of like nudging Judge Sullivan that, you really ought to dismiss the case, but not wanting to pull the trigger and tell him that he's acting lawlessly. But then, they turned around and did it on a 2-1 vote. So he had 10 days at that point to because he's kind of the defendant in this case. So he's got standing to ask for what's known as en banc review.
Does he have standing? Is that established? Because he's not a what we call a real party in interest.
Well, yeah, except the order is directed at him. And I think that because the order is directed at him, and it is directed to correct his lawlessness, he's got a right to at least ask them to take another look at it. He was represented by counsel in the as if he were the defendant in the proceeding.
Didn't the DOJ challenge his standing in its filing yesterday?
They may have. Yeah, okay. I haven't looked at the filing yet. I know that they did. I've read a report that they filed for it, but I haven't studied what they put in yet.
Yeah, and I just love having the Hugh Hewitt radio audience that understands terms like real party and interest and understands that Mandamus is not one of the lesser Roman emperors. So it's always delightful. But in any case, how do you get en banc review?
So there's 11 active judges, and they make a distinction between active judges and senior judges. At a certain point, I think when they're over 75, the judges can ask to go senior. It's up to them to decide to do it, I think, in the D.C. Circuit. But anyway, there are 11 active judges on the circuit, and the way en banc review works, at least in the D.C. Circuit, I think this is pretty common arrangement across the country, you need to get a majority of the judges, that is 6 of the 11, to vote to take the case. It doesn't mean that they're going to vote to change what the panel did, but 6 of them have to agree to review it by the full court, which means all 11. And if they decide to take it, then it would be reviewed by all 11 judges. I don't think they're going to take it, but, you know, I've been wrong on any number of things with this.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to something that's very troubling to me. Yeah. But before we do, why don't you think they're going to take it?
Well, the court skews 7-4 to Democrats, so you would think that if they're going to vote just according to party lines, then that should be the end of it. They'll take it. But I think it's a messy case for them. For example, the chief judge there is a guy by the name of Sri Srinivasan, who is often touted as somebody who's like Supreme Court material if the Democrats ever get back in. And the problem for him in this case is he wrote the main case that decides the case against Judge Sullivan.
Focker.
So he'd be in the bad position for him of either having to walk away from his own precedent, which makes him look terrible, or vote in favor of Flynn, which probably disqualifies him among progressives if he ever wants to get on the Supreme Court. So I would think and he's the chief judge.
Wait a minute, Andrew McCarthy, are you telling me that sometimes outside considerations affect pure questions of law?
Yeah, you know,
what?
I know that no one who reads Justice Gorsuch's stuff could ever believe that was true, and certainly Chief Justice Roberts' stuff. But believe it or not, I think that they occasionally take political circumstances into account.
I'm stunned, Andrew McCarthy. Well, let's move on to something I find very troubling, which is the phenomenon of left-wing prosecutors in Democrat-run big cities. Yeah. Providing top cover for rioters. They, the police arrest these guys, these DAs dismiss the charges and basically let them go. And refuse to prosecute. And when a citizen resists, as we saw in Missouri with the McCloskey family, they charge the regular citizen who's simply defending his or her home. I find that extremely, extremely troubling.
Yeah, Kurt, the problem with this is it's of a piece with everything else they're doing. You know, these are like the occasional things that rise to the surface, which, you know, we get to see and we say, man, that's not the way things are supposed to work. But this kind of stuff goes on all the time with these progressive prosecutors who are their defining characteristic is that they're politicizing the system for their agenda. And, you know, a lot of them are radical leftist lawyers. Some of them were former defense lawyers, like, for example, the guy in San Francisco, Chisa Boudin, who was the son and I guess foster son of Weather Underground terrorist, now the district attorney of San Francisco, he basically came in on a platform of let's not enforce the law except against the police. And they voted him in. So, you know, what are you going to do about the people who put people like this in prosecutors' offices? But it's the problem that you have is that this is a very thought-through plan by the left, particularly their money-raising network. And a lot of these DA races, because most DAs in the country are elected, they were typically like five-figure races, so that if you raise like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, that was a lot of money. So now the Soros network and the other lefty fundraising networks, they come in and they're plunking down, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not in some jurisdictions, millions of dollars into these races, and they're overwhelming the candidates they run against, and then they get these guys in and they implement their agenda, which is, you know, the entire menu of lefty pieties, and obviously cutting back on firearms freedom is part of it.
One of the things that we've seen, Andrew McCarthy, is these prosecutors, blatantly and unfairly allowing their allies to go free, but selectively prosecuting people who are acting, you know, clearly in self-defense. And Missouri has a very clear self-defense laws. And as we know, I don't think they're ever going to go to jail. However, in many ways, the process is the punishment. Now, Josh Hawley has asked the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, I believe, to go in and investigate this. Does the federal government have grounds to take action against what appears to be politically motivated, unfair and unequal application of the law by state officials?
Yes, they do. Yeah, they do under the civil rights laws. Now, to be clear, these cases are really hard cases because you have to show that the official who by the color of law deprived a person of his or her federal rights, you have to show that they, you know, knew and intended to do exactly that. So it's a lot harder to make these cases if you can't establish a pattern. So you need to go through, typically you would need to go through a number of cases and show that they're doing the same thing again and again, but it can absolutely be done. And the other thing they can do, Kurt, is, and the Obama administration famously did this to the country's police departments in various states around the country. So this would be a kind of a turning of the tables, but they can also file a what's known as a pattern or practice civil rights suit. Like a civil action rather than just a criminal action.
And get a consent decree or an order. McCarthy, now you've been a great critic of some of the practices in the Department of Justice bureaucracy. There are people in the Department of Justice who probably sympathize with these DAs. Now, even if William Barr doesn't.
Right.
We have about 5 seconds. Do you think as a practical matter, Barr could push through an investigation like this, or would it be stymied?
He could do it, but he's got to ride herd on the Civil Rights Division.
Ah, Andrew McCarthy, thank you. This is Kurt Schlichter sitting in for the great Hugh Hewitt. We're going to be right back with David Drucker. Stick around. We're back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter. And live from the sweltering furnace that is our nation's capital, David Drucker. How are you, David? I hear it's 80 degrees at 6:40 in the morning.
Yeah, I'm sweltering here. No joke, right? You make all the swamp jokes you want, but I'm melting.
Well, I hope it doesn't make you feel bad, but Southern California is absolutely delightful right now.
It makes me feel horrible, but that's fine. I'm from there. I know what it's like. I know what I left.
Take that, mainstream media. David, let's get right into it. What is the state of the presidential race right now, this minute?
Well, the president's losing, and he's got two issues he has to deal with, the coronavirus and the economy related to the coronavirus. But make no mistake about it, you look at all of the data, public and private, and I've talked to Republicans who are doing a lot of private polling for clients that aren't released to the public that know what they're doing, state by state, not just national polling, because obviously the battleground states matter. And the president today is losing. You know, I look at these things like an NBA basketball game. You can be losing after the first three quarters, sometimes by as much as 20 points. I don't know if you're a basketball fan, Kurt.
But, I am not.
Well, then the analogy would have worked a lot better if you were, so that's not my problem. But in an NBA basketball game, for people that know, and I'm a huge Lakers fan, you know, you can be down by 20 points about at the end of the third quarter. With that 24-second clock, you can end up winning the game. So is it over? No. Is politics, you know, sometimes unpredictable, and does it move very quick these days? Yes. So I don't think that this means the president can't win or won't win. I just think it means he's not winning today. You always want to be, you know, political consultants that run campaigns have always said, my goal was always to win, be ahead every single day. I never liked being behind. But, you know, it's like an athletic event in that campaigns aren't static. Polling is not predictive. It's not. It's like a score. You know, this is what the score is today. So that's where we're at.
Well, let's drill down on this. Is it fair to say Trump is losing or Biden is winning?
I think both. You know, I think right now the conditions on the ground are tailor-made for Biden. You know, all of the things that Republicans have tried to undermine him with, that he's running a basement campaign, that, you know, he's not as sort of aggressive. He's not running around the country, that he's, you know, he's quieter, the stamina attacks, all of that, that, you know, that he's a career politician. I think right now, a lot of Americans want that right now. They want somebody who maybe has done this for a long time because it suggests to them a level of confidence. They don't really feel like being out among a lot of people right now. A lot of Americans, you know, believe they should be wearing masks. So when they see Biden spending most of his time at home but going out for managed events with managed crowds or managed amounts of people, and being very cautious, to them, that's exactly what they think a lot of politicians should be doing. And so I think that plays to Biden's strength. I think, you know, one of Donald Trump's main strengths, big strengths, was that he was a disruptor. And he came to Washington to turn, you know, upend the apple cart and all of that stuff. Right now, I don't think most voters right now want disruption. I think they want somebody that can put things back together. And until the country is back in a position where the economy is humming and people feel safe for their, in terms of their health, I don't think disruption is something they're interested in. And that's something that sort of is instinctual to Trump. And I don't think he does the other thing necessarily. It doesn't come natural to him to be a calming force. And so I think that's part of the dynamic here.
Go ahead. I'm going to play a cut for you, and I want you to comment on it. It's by Joe Biden. Cut 13, please.
But I'm not just asking for your support because the alternative is unthinkable. I want to earn your vote, not just because he's not worthy of being president. I want to work in partnership with you to make sure your voices are included in the decision-making process as we work to rebuild our nation. We can't just build back to where we were before Donald Trump took office. We have to build back better.
Is it David Drucker, that's Joe Biden saying we got to get back and improve on where we were before Donald Trump. And of course, before Donald Trump, he was vice president. Are people going to start taking a more serious look at Joe Biden as the election approaches? And we only have about 15 seconds.
Look, I think that the campaign is going to have twists and turns, and he'll have some rough days. I think, you know, people will take a look at different parts of his record and what he said. I just think this coronavirus pandemic and the resulting economic recession is becoming the overarching issue that is suffocating the oxygen out of everything else. And I think that's what the president has to deal with.
Well, thank you, David Drucker. He is the senior writer, Washington Examiner. Follow him at David M. Drucker. And stick around here on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter. We're going to be right back at the top of the hour. The great Byron York. Stick around.